Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Larison-Dans of FrontierBeyondFear.com, and I am so delighted to welcome you all here today. Today, we are continuing our series of talks with some leading researchers in the world who are doing remarkable things both in their research and demonstrating how they can integrate spirituality into their paths and into their work, because truth is indeed the goal. And so I so admire these speakers and teachers and researchers who are coming on the show. Today our guest is Dr. Françoise Tabica. She is coming to us live from Hebrew University in Jerusalem, where she is a lead researcher with a PhD in chemistry, and she has written the book Molecular Consciousness: Why the Universe is Aware of Our Presence. She also has a spiritual path that she combines with her work, and I know that she's going to have some really amazing things to share with us that will confirm so many things that we hear in the spiritual community from a scientific perspective. And so I know this will be a very powerful conversation. If you would like to be in the chat room today, if you're listening live, if you have any questions or comments from the chat, I welcome you there. There is a live chat room open right now. And without further delay, I just am so delighted to welcome Françoise to the show. Hello, Françoise. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear.
Hello, Susan. Thank you for inviting me. I am really excited to be on your show, and I thank you very, very much. And such an amazing and very pompous introduction. I don't know where to hide myself.
Well, I feel equally blessed, Françoise, and equally thankful, because I am just so happy to discover you. I mean, what amazing work you're doing. And might I say, Françoise, I want to say this right at the outset. I know sometimes so many of us, I said this to you before the show, we had chemistry in high school, and it was a scary class for us. You know, it's not the easiest class to take for many people, especially if you don't go into the sciences. And so then we're a little bit intimidated by chemistry. And yet, Françoise, your book explains it in the most approachable of ways. In fact, you invite us to understand the basic nature of reality, and anyone can understand your book. And so I admire how you were able to do that. And so entering into this, I certainly wanted to say that.
Yeah. Well, I can say that I am, for quite a long time, I have been an autodidact. And
yes.
As I went to university and I took chemistry as a main branch, and I had 3 years for my BSc. It was so complicated, I didn't understand anything, and I thought I would never get back to chemistry.
Yes.
So I had to teach myself. So I had to really go very, very deep, because I could not understand.
So this is why
I am able to explain, because I haven't understood anything neither.
Yes.
So
you took on you took on quite a challenge then. You actually walked into something that you didn't understand at first, which is quite a brave thing to do, really, to pursue that.
Well, I can tell you that it's very personal, but after my BA, I never thought I would go back to study chemistry, and have been so that I have been pushed against the university, and then I finished my master's degree, and I didn't want to hear about chemistry. I wanted to go to TV business and editing film. But again, I have been brought back to chemistry to do a PhD, and after my PhD, I start to enjoy my chemistry.
That's really interesting how there's a lesson in that, Françoise, how we should be open to things, even when at first maybe they seem challenging. If we feel called to them with our heart, to be open.
For my PhD, I had a very, very good chemist with whom I am still working today. So yeah. He brought me back to chemistry with all my heart.
Yes. And isn't that so that the teachers, they so inspire us and you know, whether in spirituality or in other ways, I mean, in all of our paths, you know, that's interesting that a teacher brought you in. So tell me, Françoise, tell us a little bit about your spiritual path as well and how you came to that.
Well, I have been raised in a very mystical atmosphere, I would say, because my father was always attracted by mystics. So I am talking only about the atmosphere in the house. This was always like two levels, the level of the everyday life and another level which we were not sure about what it was. And this is the reason I went to study chemistry, because I was a bit scared, you know, I needed to anchor into matter.
Yeah.
So this is how it started when I was young. And then many years later, I met Colette Aboudker-Mouskat, and she was a spiritual teacher, and I studied with her for 12 years. I was just finishing my PhD in 1986, and she said, "Well, you've grown up enough now. You can come and study with me." So I went and I studied. Most of her work was to teach imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But she knew so much more about so many things that just to be with her was a real lesson every time. The way she looked at people, the way she had games about interpreting colors, interpreting smells. She could tell you who you were from tip to bottom, only by looking at you and hearing your voice and asking a few questions, the way you move, the way she taught me to look at things.
Huh.
Because when you look, you see.
Yeah. As you combined your spirituality with your work, as you were making discoveries, was it exciting? It must have been so exciting to confirm some things that you felt from a spiritual standpoint.
Yes, yes. Actually, I was quite, I was quite disappointed at sometimes with chemistry. I thought I would never find a link between what I feel inside and between chemistry. Until I was brought into Prigogine work. And Prigogine is a very, very important chemist who got the Nobel Prize in 1977
uh-huh.
because he found a way to show that life could have come from molecular reactions and that there was a slightly difference between molecules that are belong to inert world and the molecule that belongs to the living world. And it could find the link. There were some kind of reactions, chemical reactions, which were in between life and the usual path that molecule takes in the inert world.
Yes.
So he opened to me a new chemistry, and most of it, because I didn't get into the chemistry, but he opened a new way to look at matter and its relationship to life. So this was the most important for me, to see the continuation, to see that matter has something alive in it, and we are
yes.
only a kind of evolution of this life.
Yes. Yeah, there's something
meaning
so...
Go
ahead.
Meaning that we could stretch the evolutionary theory of Darwin to the atomic level, not only from the beginning of life. Our evolution
yes.
starts from our atoms.
I wonder if you could enter into this much in the way you do your book, Françoise, and perhaps give a few basic definitions to those who are listening, much as you did in your book. Kind of step into some of this. Like one area I'm really curious about, the particle and wave duality that we talk about. Just a little bit explore the nature of matter for us. As we step into this topic?
Well, all we see are made of atoms. All we see. There is only two things in our whole universe. It's matter and energy. And matter is made of atoms. So all there is in our universe that is matter is made of atoms, and there are only 100 kinds of atoms. And these atoms bind together and are forming all what we see, like Lego are binding together and are building the forms. So all that we see is a result of combination of these 100 kinds of atoms, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes the difference between a piece of wood and a piece of plastic is a combination of the atoms.
Yes.
And we also are made of atoms. We have different atoms, but most of the atoms that are in our body are found in the inner world, I mean, different only by the quantity. We have most of it is carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen. But these four elements are found all over the world. So we are a chemical system.
Yeah.
And as a chemical system, I thought that it would be very interesting to try to understand the rules moving this system, that are ruling on this system, in terms of our own psychology, of our own being, because this is what we are. So try
yes.
to find a way between these rules and our psychological rules.
Yes. Yes, you're
this
speaking.
Is what I have been trying to do. For
yes.
instance, these atoms have a character. They don't bind just like that. This is where chemistry comes in, to study the behavior and the bonds that exist between these atoms. This is what the chemists study. So we know they have rules. And so even when I'm talking to you, my atoms have rules and I don't control them. But some of it I can control, I think. And this is what I wanted to tell in the book.
How does the concept of a chemical reaction map to a psychological concept?
Well, let's say in brief, until Prigozhin, it was known that an inner system, when it reacts, it goes to a certain direction. The energy is flowing in a certain direction.
Yes.
And we knew that in life, molecules are not. It's as if there is a kind of, let's say, how do you call that? In English? A magnet. So we have a magnet where all the reacting molecules are going. Each time there is a chemical reaction, the molecules are going toward this magnet. And we have life which goes the opposite way, as if there was an other magnet. Or at least they do whatever they can not to get to the magnet where all inert matter goes. And for that they consume energy. The difference between a table and you, one of them is you consume energy.
Yes.
And this energy is used to avoid to fall into this hole, which is, in scientific term, it's called increasing entropy.
Yes.
All molecular system always react so the entropy is increased. And Prigozhin found chemical reactions which are not in contradiction to this rule. But they show that even if this rule is true, because if you don't move and you sit on a chair and you don't consume energy, in a few days you won't be here. Your
yes.
molecules will go to this hole. So we do not escape to this fate. All we can do is to fill ourselves with energy in order to go away from this fate.
Yes.
To go to life.
You talk in your book about the concept vital energy. Can you
yes.
explain that concept? Is that related? It sounds related.
Actually, there is no vital energy in the scientific world.
Oh, okay.
So
yes, it's a psychological concept, I guess. But what is vital energy? Can you describe that to us?
Which energy?
Vital energy.
Yes.
I think it's...
So, yes, go ahead, please.
It was something in the introduction to the book. I think it was more of a psychological concept. And maybe the term itself is confusing. Just, I guess the general question is just, again, energetically... You know, you talk about making and destroying energy, how you know, the first rule, for example, which very much is a scientific concept, just even going all the way back to the Big Bang. I mean, how does this all relate to us even more so?
Well, we are a chemical system, and... We consume energy and we lose energy all the time. There is a flow of energy in our body, a flow of chemical energy all the time. So the issue is who controls this energy?
Yes.
because energy, we use it for many purposes. One of them is we have hardly no control. We use it to, usually the temperature outside is not 37 Celsius, which is the temperature in the body.
Yeah.
Usually it is colder outside. So we need all the time fuel to stay at this temperature. So this is why we eat. Part of this energy used to heat us, like a stew.
Yes.
And what is interesting when you think of it, and this is Professor Tsakhanover, Nobel chemistry of Israel, who said once, he suddenly made us realize that our life is only within few degrees, from 36, 35 until 40, and that's it. 41, you're gone. So we are a stew. We are a stew that we heat all the time. And we use energy also for other things. We use energy, to move your eyes, to move your body. So most of it we don't really control. We don't control our body contraction. But there is an energy that we can control. For instance, I believe it is not scientific, but I believe that, and we all do, we all sense that fear is an energy, that anger is energy. So you can control it. We know there are many schools who teach you how to control your anger and how you control your fears. And what I want to say in the book, this is my intuition, is that when we succeed to control this energy and we choose life, our molecules are following us and we escape many disease and many other bad conditions that we could have if we let our molecules go their way.
Yeah.
Meaning that we surrender to sadness, to anger, to jealousy, and all kinds of these feelings, which we know are hurting us. We all know that in the bottom of our heart.
Yes. How does meditation impact our molecular structure or the behavior of our molecules if we pursue meditative things or reflective things?
Well, I believe that in a state of meditation, the molecules are more in resonance, because what I also suggest in the book is the bond of these molecules which are going to life have a long resonance. And here I have to go back maybe to the particle wave, the duality.
Yes.
I told you at the beginning that all matter was made of atoms, and the atoms are classically described are made of proton, neutron, electron, and all these until the beginning of the 20th century were seen as little beads. But after the discovery of quantum mechanics, these beads have become waves. There is no bead. Atoms are no beads. They are waves. So I want to say that I believe that when molecules are going away from this hole I was talking about, which is called the chemical equilibrium, they start to interfere on the long range, to be connected on the long range, which is a phenomenon known in the physics of waves. Waves can interfere and be connected through a very long range. So I believe that meditation brings the molecules in a state of long-range resonance.
Yes.
Which means something very Yeah, what you understood.
yes, I
very
thinking
quiet,
about
very
it makes me feel peaceful. When people talk about the law of attraction, or you know, the power of our mind over our realities, how does that relate to the molecular world?
Well, this in fact relates more to the new discovery of physics, and it has been shown like in beautiful movies like What the Blip Do We Know?
Yes.
Because of this, a particle is not a particle, it's a wave.
Yes.
And actually it's not one wave. Each particle is what is called a wave packet. The matter, it's very difficult to really sense it, but matter is like is made of waves of probability. So actually, and the other revolutionary aspect of quantum mechanics is that there is no reality with no observer, meaning
yes.
that we create. So we have like a way, a very big number, a huge number of possibilities, and actually it is our brain that consciously or unconsciously chose what is our reality. And I believe that there is like a universal agreement about what the table is, what a chair is. But
uh-huh.
if suddenly we all decide it's going to be something else, it is going to be something else. And,
huh.
and I'm not talking about semantic here. I'm talking about we have another look at life. There are many possibilities.
Yes.
So at least if we are not going to change the whole world, we can change the way we look at people, we can change the way we look at flowers, we can change the way we feel.
Yes.
Because we choose our reality and the way we respond to what happens to us.
Yes, we can change the way that we look at challenges in our lives, because it's so easy to get stressed and depressed, or you know, fall into that hole that you talk about in a way, and it seems that I think that's always the hardest question, Françoise. Is you know, a lot of people, each of us has some hardship on our path or challenges, and isn't it so much in the way that we use them? I tend to start using them as tools, knowing okay. This particular situation is meant to help me grow, as opposed to becoming depressed about it. And then also, I would be curious what you would say, you know, in terms of transforming a challenge into a wonderful outcome and maybe encountering fewer of them. Could you speak to that a little, which is very What the Bleep?
Yeah, well, I think you've said it all. I mean... we are put in front of challenges, but what I believe is that, and what is taught in many schools, is that these challenges are made to make you grow, to make you understand what you need to correct. Let's say that you are full of anger, but you have to look, why are you full of anger? Because maybe this can be, you know, just look at it. And usually when you look at your anger, then it doesn't seem so frightening, and you learn how to tame your anger. And not only with a big emotional involvement, just to look at it and to accept it and to understand it. And you can grow slowly.
You know, one area I think so many of us get stuck is in a cycle of blame, where something happened, you know, somebody did something, or we see it that way, and it caused us harm. And so then we get, you know, or that's our perception. And so we get in this cycle, and it can repeat and repeat, and it keeps recurring where, you know, if only that thing hadn't happened, and, you know, the victim consciousness. And I'm wondering what you would say to shifting that into a more empowered consciousness, away from victimhood.
Well, I am now still studying internal development, and I am studying Yemima's method. And Yemima was an Israeli Jewish woman, and she had a wonderful method, which is now spreading all over Israel, and this is what I am learning now. And the method is that she makes you feel that in all of us, and she makes you recognize that there is a child, and this child is still very afraid. It hasn't grown as fast as the body. And,
yes.
And he's the one who reacts all the time. And it has to grow. And in order to make him grow, you just have to be very gentle with him, meaning that you have to look at your blame. Why? Why? Don't be afraid. Why do you think you are guilty? Why indeed do you think you are guilty? It's a method that is full of love and tell you whatever you've done, you are not guilty. You were ignorant. That's all. So she transforms the guilt into accepting that you didn't know. So you can clean yourself and from the guilt. And then even if you're in a situation where you should not be guilty, you feel this guilt, you will not feel it anymore. Because it's always the little child that is responsible most of the time.
Yes.
Did I make myself clear?
Yes, you did. And as you were talking, it suddenly dawned on me, you know, I'm talking to someone in Israel, and that's a place where many of us might be frightened to be. You know, it's probably, and maybe you can help us with this in other parts of the world, Françoise, how you keep your fears at bay, because, you know, so many times right now, even with what happened here in the United States in Boston, and the fears, the bigger cultural fears that are in our world, and given our show here is so much about fear, could you talk a little bit about how you work with your own fear, being in a part of the world that many would view as not a very stable place, and yet I have noticed people there, you know, they have ways of keeping their fears at bay and going on with normal life. And could you speak to that from your own perspective, Françoise?
Well, this is a very personal question. It's not connected to my book, but I will answer.
I can't help but ask you while you're on here, and then we'll get back to the book, I promise.
No, you don't have to.
Well, this show, we love just going wherever it flows, and you very beautifully described so much already. So I so want to hear this, because I think it would help people greatly in the U.S. and in other parts of the world. So if you could explain it, I would love to hear.
Well, it is quite simple. I put my faith in God.
Yes.
And as I put my faith in God, I am not fearful of anything. I know that things will take care of themselves, that we have to learn how to love each other. We are full of fear because we are fear to love.
We are fearful.
And this has made our world very miserable.
Yes.
We are all fearful of our neighbor. This
yes,
is ridiculous.
So
and we are all closed into our fear. So first of all, because I have a full faith in God, I am not fearful at all.
Yes.
Even when there is there are times that are not very quiet, but you would be surprised to come in Israel and in Jerusalem and to see how safe you feel.
Yes.
I travel a lot and I go to many places. I have never felt as safe as here.
Yes.
My children are going out 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. It's a bet. It's a bet.
Yeah.
You can bet on love, which for me represents one attribute of God, and you can bet on fear and on hate and I bet. And so far I have won.
Uh huh. And as a parent myself, I know how those can be even more powerful. How we feel as a mother. We're so protective and of course those are positive. I mean, it's good to be nurturing and protective, but still not in that space of fear. So I admire how you are able to approach that very much.
But I can tell you that it's also a kind of a molecular response, you see, because
yeah.
I know that if I fear, things are happening, actually, you know. It's
yeah.
as if I am calling them, because I believe them. It's connected now back to what we said about quantum physics. You know, I create with my fear. I create my presence. So you can create your presence with love, and you can create it with fear. This belongs to the tool that you use to create your world.
Yes.
Because we create our world all around us.
Do you believe that there may be some real concept of critical mass, so to speak, in the sense of this becoming contagious? the shift that we talk about, the quantum leap, you know, that could you speak to that as well?
Well, it's you told me before the show that you felt an awakening all over the world. I'm very optimistic. I can feel it, and in Jerusalem I can surely feel it. And it's spread all over now. People want to connect. People want to take their masks out. People want to love. People, you know, so many books to improve yourself, to be better, to be this. And as you said, I hope there will be a critical mass, and suddenly, things might happen.
You know, I can feel it, Françoise, just in this show alone. Do you know that this show has made me think, this show that you're on right now, I feel so close to you. We're international. And, you know, I am the class, well, I haven't had a lot of opportunity to travel in my life. I'd like to, and I will. I'm setting my intent to do so. But I was, you know, I was a mother in Kansas for over 10 years. In Kansas, I mean, everybody knows what Kansas is like.
Yeah.
And now I'm in Oregon, which is a much different place. But the thing is I'm feeling this incredible, just through this show, spirit across the world. I mean, just connecting to you. I mean, here I am. What many would call an American who's hardly traveled at all, although we'd like to, many of us, and I feel this incredible sense of, it's like I can't even put it in words. It's an expansion. I can feel it. It's very, again, words don't express what I'm feeling right now in reaching out to you across the world, and I think it's very, very much in line with what you just said.
I am very moved.
Well, you know, often we kind of try to hide that. It's like, yeah, you know, I really was kind of stuck in Kansas, you know. Kind of my own little hole. But, you know, I was growing there. And I'm expanding. You know, I came from a very conservative path here. I came from the most, I am the granddaughter, Françoise, of an evangelical minister, although also a very mystical path. And actually, I am a mystic myself. I have had mystical experiences, and that's a continuing theme on this show. So it's really interesting. You're actually compatible with that theme as well. We've had a number of mystics, and we've even had a professor who's one of the top experts in studying mysticism. I think he'll find your work interesting. But in any case, there is just this sense of we are awakening. I mean, I awakened out of that path. It doesn't matter that I was in Kansas for over 10 years. It doesn't matter. I am opening up to the world, and more of us are. I know other people from Kansas, not to pick on Kansas, but it's just such a classic symbol, isn't it? they're awakening too. I have tremendous hope, and I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it through this show, connecting to you, and it makes me want to come there. I mean, now I really want to travel. I'm feeling that more and more. And not be afraid. You know, go to Jerusalem. Don't be afraid. Why should you be afraid?
You will not be less safe than in the streets of Paris, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think this whole concept, you know how we label each other, Françoise, and some of the stereotypes are true. You know, we can be very insulated in America, for example, and yet we're so capable of opening up, and what a beautiful experience that is. And we're so capable worldwide of seeing others, even those we perceive as, you know, against us in some way. I don't believe in that. I believe there's always a path to find peace. I mean, I really believe that's part of the awakening, that we will find the path to peace.
At least maybe not all of us will follow, unfortunately, but as you say, a critical mass would be enough to
yes.
change the world.
Yes. Now, I'm going to bring this totally to a different place, kind of bringing it back closer to your work, not just because of what you said a little bit ago, but also because I think there are some people who are probably curious about a topic I had noted that I wanted to ask you about. A lot of people in the spiritual community are very intrigued by the concept of alchemy. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, since you are a chemist and you know the history. I think that there are those out there who would appreciate hearing a little bit about alchemy.
Well, I am not a specialist in alchemy, so all I'm going to say is what I feel about it, about all I've read about.
Yeah.
First of all, alchemists were the first chemists. They were the first to, today it seems very normal that to have two solid mix, two white powder and get a green one, or have two gas and becoming a piece of solid, or you have a solid becoming a gas. You know, all this transformation, chemistry is a science of transformation. So
yes.
I understand why the first alchemists were looked at as if they were magicians. It's very impressive to be in a lab and see all these transformations. Now we are used to it, but still it's amazing how these atoms can transform all
yes.
these species that can be created with only hundreds of atoms. And so I think they started to study these compounds, and I believe that some of them were attracted by the mystical aspect of this transformation, and they might have understood that if they can transform matter, they can transform their inner matter.
Yeah.
And I think that most of them were spiritual teachers. Because of that, of course, there were all kinds of charlatans that were trying to to make gold into from lead. If this has been possible, I don't know. I don't want to pronounce on that. I don't know what
no,
it
means. No, that's
mean.
All right. I just knew that you would understand it. Yes.
But I do believe that they were looking for the elixir of life, because if you always put your molecule in the right direction, meaning that you have understood all your, well, let's say you can, that then you can decide to have your molecules all the time away from this hole, and there is no reason why it can't be. So maybe they have understood this, or they were looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a potion, this I doubt. I don't know.
That was the old way.
I believe you can heal yourself from many diseases, surely not all of them, but from many, let's say, many inconvenience, physical inconvenience. And this is what my teacher was Colette Aboulker was teaching, to change the path of your molecule.
Yeah.
And she was having very interesting results.
You know, as you're speaking, I was thinking, you know, maybe this potion that mankind has sought all these centuries, it doesn't need to exist in a physical way. It's really in the mind that, you know, that we don't need that anymore. That's what we sought, and we saw that it was possible in some way, but that the true power is in the mind.
Well, I don't want to say that we are going to be mortal, but I say it could be. I mean, in theory, it is.
Yeah, but, we would actually be immortal. We would have to transform. I mean, so many people talk about, oh, we can become light beings and things like that. Although if we did, we wouldn't quite be what we are. I mean, we would be transformed. We would be in a different state. It would be a state change of significance. and one often wonders if it would be much different than being across the veil, or, you know, after you die, transition. We are immortal, essentially, in that sense, you know. We go on. I firmly believe that. And so I wonder, you know, we use terminology and think about things in different ways, and sometimes it actually may be true. And in fact, there's a question for you. I know, again, it may not be specifically related to your book, but what about the afterlife? I wonder if you could speak to that briefly, your view of it, just as a person, as a spiritual person, coming from your view.
I think what is written in Judaism, that there is a death is only a change of state.
Yes.
So and our molecules are dispersed, but they never die. You know, matter doesn't die. We find them in rocks, we find them in the sea, we find them in the earth, but they are not dying. They can't die. They can't go anywhere. But of course, what is suddenly lacking is this coherence between our molecules, and I believe this lack of coherence is what happens when our body grows old, you know. There is less and less communication between our molecules, because all kind of, maybe because we don't have energy, and because as we get old, we think about, you know, regrets and so on and so forth, and we tend to let go, you know, and it's also a very strong brainwash. That we know we have to, at 40 we have to look like that, at 60 we have to look like that, and so on and so forth. So I do believe it has an impact on, and and afterlife, I believe something, I don't know, but it's just a transition.
Yeah.
It's just a transition, and I don't know what. I believe I am not going to say what I am, but it's another experience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to hear your perspective. I do have a question from your book that I can't not ask. It's an important question. We're, of course, the time is flying by, as usual. What about molecules talking to each other? I know in your book you talk about, like, communication by touch and, you know, how they are communicating. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. Well, since the beginning of the century, maybe a little earlier, there was a new concept called biological information, because we know that in the body, information is passing through. Let's say I see a screen in front of me, and my molecules are passing the information until it reaches my brain, and I become I can. Actually, what I believe we do is that, you know, we have a telephone line. A telephone line is bringing a wave into a sound. So what we do, we bring this wave into an image, a three-dimensional image. But what we receive all the time are waves. And these waves are made through our mind. The molecules are building a reality. And this goes through biological information. So it is said that, you know, we have so many molecules. So to understand suddenly that I have a screen in front of me, I have only certain molecules that have reacted until they have reached my brain and told me that there was a screen. So they need to recognize themselves. And so there is this new concept that is called biological information. Molecules are transmitting biological information. And it is said that this information is transmitted through molecules that are looking for each other. You know, like if you are in a big crowd and you look for your mate. So how you know it is it only because of your shape. You rub yourself against it and then you it hits, you know. So it's your molecule. So this is a way, grosso modo, that biologists speak about how biological information is being transmitted. But I believe it is transmitted through the wave. It seems much more normal. And I believe that the more information you can have like a noise that is not loud, and you can have a noise that is very loud. So I just had a noise now. So
yes,
it's the same. So if the noise is very low, then no many molecules will hear it, and the body will not understand, and it will get older. And so I do believe that when there is life in a body, molecules interfere on the long range. They communicate on a very long range and through their waves, not through the looking for the shape. You see, it sounds not very practical.
You talk about molecules having moods. What does that mean? How can a molecule have a mood? Or can they?
No, I think this was a game, or name of the chapter. But in the chapter,
okay. It's just a way of entering into it. What about the holographic universe? I know we've seen this and that's yet another chapter in your book, where we've certainly seen that in What the Bleep Do We Know. Can you describe that concept from your perspective?
Well, as I say, all we receive is our waves. And I believe that our brain is like a holographic plate. It receives waves, and it transforms into reality. It looks solid, you know. I touch my screen now, my computer. It looks solid, but in fact, it's waves.
Yeah.
So,
see, when I think about it, just questioning, is there this concept of the universe contained in a molecule? You know, where everything is contained in everything. I guess would be the way I've wondered about it.
I don't know.
You don't know. All right. Well, I know that it's a very complex topic, this holographic view. That's why I don't begin to understand it either.
Yeah, I remember now that according to the physics of black holes, all the universe, all the information of our universe is somewhere at the end of our universe.
Yeah.
As if it had a wall. But these are theories, and this is how I understand them. Maybe I am accurate.
Well, we both approach the boundaries of understanding with this. So, because I think it almost does enter into the realm of mysticism, really, to even begin to comprehend it. And sometimes that isn't really the mind, it's more. And so I think we're both seeing that in it, but I am just so happy that we have been led to such depth in this discussion. We're in the last few minutes already of the live show. It does go into the podcast if we allow it, but we try to wrap up as easily as we can. Sometimes it's hard. But can you tell me, just to wrap up, we do have a link to your book on the page at Inner Traditions. Is there anything else that you want to tell us about your work, where people can learn about you, or upcoming appearances, things that just about your work to close the show?
Well, there is what is called the SAND Conference. It's Science and Non-Duality. It's a new circle of conference that started a few years ago, and I have been aware of it not long ago, and I am going to give a short lecture on perception. It will be held in Holland. You can find it in the internet at the end of the month.
Okay. Yeah, I might have you email the exact spelling of that to me, and I'll put it up on the show page, so I'm sure to have it. I'll be in communication with you via email, and we'll make sure any information that we want to put out there. Do you have a website, Françoise? I haven't put one for you. I just had a link to the book. I wasn't sure if you had a website of your own or any kind of Facebook. Or not everybody's on these things, but do you have anything like that?
I don't have a website. I have opened, or I'm going to open a page called Molecular Consciousness on Facebook.
Oh, good. Yeah, when you do, I will put that on the show page itself. And, you know, this goes into the podcast, so many people listen to the archived version, and I am going to be indexing these shows soon so they're more easily accessible by topic and by author. And so that will be good. Once that's opened, I'll be sure to communicate that to people.
Nope.
So, you know, as we're entering into the last minute or so, let me just say thank you. Thank you so much for coming on this show. I am truly blessed by your presence here. And you've raised my energy. Can you feel it? The energy level, I can feel. it's very good. And I just want to thank you.
Well, I feel very blessed to have been with you.
Well,
thank you very
much. Yes, and, you know, I so look forward to seeing how your work evolves. And I think you would be a beautiful presence in some of these films that are being made with the scientists doing amazing work. And it is my hope that your voice will go out in the world, because I think it's a really wonderful thing that you've done and what you continue to do. So thank you and peace to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Bye-bye.
All right. You take care.
Bye. You too. Much love. From Jerusalem.
Yes, thank you. As we wrap up the show today, I just wanted to make one note about just in the podcast about our next show. Be a little bit of a gap before the next show. As we move into summer, I'll probably do the show a little bit less often. Researchers aren't quite as available, and also I'm going to be working on my own book project coming up. I'm really getting into some other projects as well, but we will continue to be here for sure. And I have a show scheduled a week from today, Thursday, May 23rd, at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and world-renowned researcher PMH Atwater is returning to the show, and she's going to talk some more about the new children. PMH was with us last year, and she introduced this topic to us about the higher consciousness children on the planet. And so this is the first return appearance by PMH. She has requested to come on the show 3 months in a row. So that is going to be a wonderful gift to all of us. And during this first show, next Thursday, May 23rd, 11 a.m. Pacific, she will be talking some more about these remarkable children and how they are demonstrating an awakened higher consciousness presence. And then in future shows in both June and July, we're going to be talking about her, what she's definitely known for being one of the top near-death experience experts in the world, if not the top expert, very possibly. She's done extensive research and writing in that area. So she's going to talk about that. And then we're also going to have another show on a new book she has coming out. This show will probably be in July, on future memory, which is a very interesting topic. That I know that we will find very intriguing. So that's coming up. We have a number of other guests coming up throughout the summer. This show will be here in the summer months, and then we'll continue strong into the fall. And I'm just so delighted to have you all here. And if you want to learn anything about the schedule, all you need to do is go to frontierbeyondfear.com, and there are also ways to support the show there, should you feel called to help support the maintenance costs, the monthly costs for the show. I'm always very welcoming of your gifts and appreciate that too. So thank you so much for being here today. I hope you too felt that wonderful international sense of being so connected, and there really is no separation between us, whether we're from Kansas. Actually, I'm not from Kansas. I'm from Colorado, but I spent a long time in Kansas. No matter where we're from, we are awakening and we are coming together, whether we are scientists or whether we have no inkling of science at all. We can understand one another. We can talk the same language. And I very much encourage you to read Françoise's book, Molecular Consciousness, because it really brings this topic to you in a very simple to understand way. And I know that you will benefit from that. So again, I hope this show finds you in a peaceful place. I wish you peace on your path. Thank you so much.